Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
Heart disease, arthritis, dementia, diabetes, and depression, these are all conditions believed to be helped by exercise. Many surgical patients are encouraged to get up and moving within hours after a major procedure. So why is bed rest still prescribed as a treatment for some high-risk pregnancies? This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. While exercise is recommended for most pregnant women, some who appear to be in danger of premature delivery or other complications are told to stay in bed for days, weeks, even months on end. And as my guest has learned, many are reluctant to ask why or even whether there is solid scientific evidence that staying immobile will make a difference for their babies. Writer Alexandra Kleeman's article, The Bed Rest Hoax, is the cover story in the December issue of Harper's Magazine. Alexandra, welcome to Think.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You call prolonged bed rest an extreme physiological challenge. Why is it so hard on the body to be still?
Well, it's counterintuitive, right? We rest every single night, we rest for hours, and it recharges us. The difference is when you go into prolonged long-term rest, days at a time, weeks at a time, your body actually starts to adapt to that change in posture and the change in movement. So you experience muscle atrophy within the first 48 hours. You experience a constriction and narrowing of the blood vessels. And over long periods of time, you experience bone loss, difficulty standing when you do get back up, and possible fainting and things like that when you do return to an upright position.
Reading this article, I was thinking about people taking to their beds in Victorian novels. And in light of modern science, one has to wonder if what was meant to cure them actually made them sicker.
Yeah. I mean, when you look back at some of those characters now, elderly people who've been in bed for years, you can see how it might be really difficult to get out of bed. You might take to bed and just stay there because my experience actually is that if you spend a long time in bed, you're actually more tired when you get out. Again, another thing you wouldn't think would happen. But I originally came to this article through this sort of interest in Victorian medicine. My interest was in exploring bed rest at that time, and especially how it was prescribed to women for nervous ailments. And I was surprised to find it continuing on, lingering on in medical practice for a very specific subset of women.
We should say that you actually tried this for 5 days. You did a you weren't ill or pregnant, I gather, but you did a self-imposed bed rest at a Catholic convent of all places.
Yeah. That was an interesting experiment to try to carry out. For one thing, it was very difficult to convince a place to let me go through with bed rest as a healthy person. I tried all sorts of venues. I tried hospitals. I tried nursing homes. And you have to come into those with a medically diagnosable ailment. So I found a very nice group of nuns at a priory in Washington State who let me have a room there that's usually used for people on silent retreats. So I was the only person there who could speak, I suppose, in my wing.
What made you feel like you had to experience this for yourself?
Well, part of it was bed rest sort of use as a psychological treatment back in the turn of the century, around the 1880s or 1900s. This was something that was supposed to calm the mind and sort of settle the nervous system. And so I wanted to find out for myself whether that really was the effect. What I found was it was actually very distressing. There's a way that you become more tired when you don't have exercise. You never really wake up. You never really pass out of the sort of sleeping state, napping state. And I was very distressed to find myself growing tireder, growing sore, and having trouble getting up and moving when I did have, food breaks or bathroom breaks. So it was a radical change in my body, and I only experienced it for 5 days. So you have to wonder what happens to women who are on bed rest for, 3 months, 2 months.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about how it is that bed rest fell by the wayside for any number of other conditions, but has remained a fairly common recommendation for women with difficult pregnancies. What did you learn about that?
Right. So bed rest sort of came into use as a medical treatment in the 1800s, 1860s, with John Hilton's book Rest and Pain. And he was one of the first doctors to say, like, no, actually, a hospital isn't a dangerous place where you could get ill, fall iller, and sort of perish there. It's a place where you could rest and let nature take its healing course. And this was a new idea, or an uncommon idea, unconventional, and it really took Victorian medicine by storm. You had people suddenly being put to bed for a wide variety of ailments, not just the things that you think of, like broken bones, but arthritis, gout, tiredness, all sorts of disorders would be treated with bed rest. And because bed rest was seen as a pure good at that point, you'd sort of be advised to take as much of it as possible, which led to people spending months in bed or even longer. Some of these characters in novels who are bedridden for the last several years of their lives, that would be following the gist of John Hilton's advice, although he actually wasn't as extreme as that. As time went on, we found after World War II that returning veterans recovered more quickly and recovered a wider range of functions if they were able to get out of bed and exercise and use their body earlier. So that made people start to question, like, oh, how much rest is actually helpful, how much rest is needed. And another turning point was in the 50s and 60s when NASA started thinking of bed rest as a way to experiment on Earth with the effects of zero gravity. So if you put a person in a bed and tilt the head of the bed back by 6 degrees, you can actually simulate this physiological state of being in outer space. Hmm. The blood flows as easily, the heart pumps as much. And so NASA would put people to bed in facilities for various lengths of time, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 3 months, and then see what they were able to do once they got up, and also test different types of diets, protein-rich diets on them, or see what different types of exercise did to mitigate the effects. But suddenly bed rest was viewed as an actual intervention into the way the body worked instead of just a neutral thing or, a helpful rest period for the body to start to heal. It had effects of its own.
It's almost, it is frightening how quickly the body begins to weaken when it is not moving.
It is. It's surprising, too. You notice a lot of changes within the first 24 or 48 hours. There are effects in blood flow. The heart starts pumping less. There's changes in constriction and changes in musculature already. You have so many muscles whose purpose is to keep you upright. We're the only animal, I think, that lives upright, and many other mammals cannot handle being put into an upright position. One of my favorite facts I came across in this article was that sheep and rabbits faint or lose consciousness or even die when they're held upright. So it's difficult to keep that blood flowing up to the head.
But of course, our bodies are made to keep that blood flowing. And probably anyone who's ever like had the flu for a couple of days and couldn't get out of bed, you know what it feels like as you're recovering. You feel different in ways that are not necessarily related to the virus itself.
Right. Rest has an effect, and it's not just the effect that we expect. There are physical effects that linger on. And one thing that I feel that doctors should take into account when prescribing this is that after giving birth, you're going to be doing a lot of active caring for the baby. You're going to be doing a lot of physical work, and to be sort of catching up, to working to try to get to the state that you were in before you went on bed rest as you're managing being a new mother is a lot.
So how did old ideas about the natural frailty of women play into the advice about the benefits of rest, not specifically for pregnancy, but for, like, I guess what at the time were considered nervous conditions, things like depression and stress?
Right. Yeah, the thing that originally drew me into this topic was my interest in this disorder that's now obsolete called neurasthenia. So neurasthenia was a disorder that encompassed many different symptoms, symptoms we might now associate with depression or anxiety, but they'd be everything from anxious thoughts, difficulty sleeping, worries, palpitations, difficulty digesting, to some more esoteric symptoms. There's a list in one of the tracts that I read that lists about 85 different symptoms, and they could be pain in the teeth, abnormal gum coloration, like things like this. And one doctor, Silas Weir Mitchell, became very well known for his own treatment, which was called the rest cure, which involved putting women to bed for periods usually from 4 weeks to 6 weeks, and forbidding them intellectual stimulation, like reading, no use of your hands, no writing, no visits from family members or friends, total passivity.
It's like solitary confinement.
It's solitary confinement, yeah. And you could see how this might have what you might think of as a calming effect, or you could call it a numbing effect. But it also was a psychologically untenable situation for a lot of women. I remember reading the story, The Yellow Wallpaper, by Charlotte Perkins Gilman when I was in high school. It's about a woman who's suffering from weakness of nerves, who gets put to bed by her husband, who's a doctor, and confined there for weeks. And as she spends this time alone, unable to write, which was her occupation, unable to live her life as she was used to living it, she starts to go insane and hallucinate a figure moving through the wallpaper around her. Charlotte Perkins Gilman was actually a patient of Silas Weir Mitchell's, and she wrote this story in part as a protest against his treatment, a way of getting him to think about what the actual psychological effects were for women, not just what psychological effects he expected women to have. So from there, you know, I think that a lot of the paternalism has sort of faded from medicine. But in situations where we don't have a clear medically supported, medically endorsed treatment for certain disorders, I think our intuition or our folk beliefs take over a lot of the time. And this is one situation, I think, where the female body, which has always been thought of as very fleshy, you know, where as women we're thought of as deeply connected to our bodies in a psychological way, and our psychology also affects our bodies. So there is an impulse, I think, still lingers to put the body at rest as a way of both resting the mind, stilling the mind, and stilling whatever reactive physiological processes might be happening.
We're speaking this hour with writer Alexandra Kleeman. Her article, The Bedrest Hoax, is the cover story in the December issue of Harper's Magazine. We'll come back to the conversation in a couple of minutes, and you can join it by calling 1-800-933-5372. You can also email think@kera.org or send me a tweet. I'm @ChrisBoydThink.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, with test preparation courses for graduate school admission, including the GRE, GMAT, and LSAT. smu.edu/test prep.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with writer Alexandra Kleeman, whose cover story, The Bedrest Hoax, appears in the December issue of Harper's Magazine. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372 or email think at kera.org. Okay, Alexandra, I think it's clear, but I want to reiterate that you're not a doctor or a scientist. You've studied this, done research as a journalist. But the big question here, there may be paternalism at work, there may be a lot of customs that no longer make sense to us in the modern world. The big question, though, is whether it works. What kind of research exists to assess whether staying in bed for weeks on end might prevent something like premature labor or other complications that pregnant women really don't want?
Well, the research that exists now pretty much unanimously says there is no positive effect of bed rest for a wide variety of conditions that it is prescribed for. It doesn't help with preventing preterm labor. It doesn't help mothers who have a shortened cervix. It might have a slight effect on gestational hypertension or preeclampsia, that's high blood pressure. But some studies show a slight effect and some studies don't. And the studies that do show an effect actually say that 4 to 6 hours of rest a day works just as well. So you can get that same effect without going on total bed rest, strict bed rest, confined to your bed, you know.
So why is it still, how widely is it being prescribed in 2015?
Well, in 2015, unfortunately, we don't have a super recent statistic, but the most recent statistic that's requoted in a lot of the papers that come out even now comes from 1994, I believe, and it shows in a survey that 18.5% of pregnant women are put on bed rest at some point, which is about 700,000 women a year.
Wow.
More recently, a survey talked to different OBGYNs and found out that something between 87 and 95% of them have prescribed bed rest in their own practice. And the reasons why this happens are complicated. Like, on the one hand, even though there is nothing that is shown definitively to prevent these things, to prevent problems with multiple gestations with twins, or to prevent preterm labor or early birth, this seems like something that won't hurt, right? People want to prescribe it maybe because there's nothing they can recommend that will definitely work, but this will at least maybe have a chance of working, or it'll provide the psychological comfort of having something to do about this problem, right? So there's that. And there's also, I think, some doctors that I spoke to said that women are coming in and asking them for bed rest. And this is also related to that. Like, you want to do something to help your baby. You want to find something that you can control in what is an extremely stressful and difficult to manage situation. And then there's also the fact that research OBGYNs, obstetricians with research experience are much less likely to prescribe it. And this is because they're reading journals that contain sort of the latest evidence from clinical trials. But if you're in a more general practice, you know, your day is taken up with patients, with work, and it's harder to know exactly what journal to look at to find that information that will suggest that you should be more careful in prescribing bed rest.
How does guilt play into this? Or mothers sense that if they don't do this thing, they might then be like responsible for a problem with their pregnancy?
Yeah, I spend a lot of time on pregnancy-related message boards. So there are whole communities within, say, babycenter.com for women who are on bed rest. And a lot of them are on there because they need support as they go through this treatment, which, as we discussed, is very psychologically trying. They also want to get clarification on their doctor's orders. Like, I'm supposed to be on bed rest. I'm on strict bed rest, but am I allowed to sit up, for example? Some doctors will tell you not to. Some won't specify, and some will tell you explicitly you have that freedom. But these are things that can be very unclear and also vary so much from doctor to doctor and patient to patient. And women are worried that they're going to do something that will harm their baby further. So women care, you know, they want to protect their child, and they want to do the maximum they can to protect their child. So there's a lot of guilt then if you feel like you got up and went to the kitchen and you stood too long and you find that you have tenderness or you have contractions, that seems then to be to reflect on your own actions, you know, that you did something wrong, you violated bed rest, and now it's your fault if something goes wrong. And that just is not founded on any medical knowledge. You know, that's, I think, a really harmful psychological effect of this prescription.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's speak with Doug in Lake Whitney. Hi, Doug.
Yes. Hi, Chris. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Well, I moved my daughter into Foster Hall at TCU, and I thought about you a couple of months ago.
Oh, well, I'm glad she's there.
Yeah, she's enjoying it. The question I have for Alexander is this. It's related a bit to what you were discussing about the prescription of bed rest, and a number of obstetricians have left a number of states just because of liability issues. When a shoulder is positioned the wrong way, they'll prescribe a cesarean in order to protect themselves and to avoid potential liability. And my question for Alexander is, in your research, you found that the prescription for bed rest is a way to sidestep potential liability falling back on the doctor. I'll take my answer off here.
Thanks for your call.
That's a great point, yeah. And in my research, I did find one specific case. It's a very dramatic case, this. In 2009, a woman named Samantha Burton went in because she was experiencing contractions that might signal preterm labor. She went into her doctor. Her normal doctor wasn't there. And the new doctor that she was paired with advised her to go on hospital bed rest. Now, she already had two children at home, and she said it was impossible for her to do that. She said she'd go home and rest, but she just couldn't afford to stay in the hospital and be separated from her family. So the doctor was afraid of this very liability issue, and he went and talked to the hospital legal team, which advised him to gain a court order to confine her to bed. So this Florida court approved that, and she was confined to bed for 3 days under extreme duress. She was extremely distressed, and she actually miscarried within those days. So this is one case, I think, where doctors wanted to protect themselves, but if doctors and courts had the same knowledge about the sort of lack of foundational evidence for bed rest, this case may never have happened, and it had such a sad outcome.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have Carl on the line now in Dallas. Hi, Carl.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The reason I was calling is that I'm fairly recently married, and my wife has a genetic condition that causes a lot of joint instability, causes fainting, and a variety of other things. But we've talked on and off about the possibility of getting pregnant, and we've seen a high-risk OBGYN, and he actually said that most likely she would be prescribed bed rest leading up to the actual birth, not because of any concerns for the baby, but because of concerns for her falling, potentially injuring herself long-term. And I was just curious on your guest's thoughts on what, you know, those side effects are. My thought is that she's generally prescribed exercise to keep her joints stronger, and that bed rest would actually be counterproductive to that.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm not a medical doctor, so I obviously shouldn't give strong prescriptive advice. But it does seem to me that there could be physiological effects of the bed rest for your wife, and you'd want to talk to a doctor about that as well.
I was going to ask if in your research you found that the risks and the benefits of bed rest are explained to women typically when their doctors prescribe it. Like, do they understand exactly what they're supposed to be doing and why?
Many of the women that I talked to or read about on different forums didn't have a clear idea of why they were being prescribed it. And doctors I spoke to weren't really able to give me an explanation of why bed rest would work. One sort of folk explanation would be that there's pressure on the cervix from the weight of a baby, right? So if you remove the effect of gravity, then perhaps you remove some of that pressure. But again, the clinical trials just do not bear that out. I think a lot of it rests on intuition, and one of the things that is common across all of the research that I found is that the doctors conducting the research are urging people to do more studies with larger populations, controlled studies that can add to our body of understanding, because there's still fewer explorations of this subject than there are of others, and if we could get more evidence that it doesn't work, it'd be easier to craft a really strong rebuttal.
So it's not necessarily discussed in the doctor's office, but if a woman is pregnant and she receives a prescription medication for something and she gets that, you know, bottle of pills or whatever, there's a leaflet in there that says these are the potential side effects. You know, if you have concerns or you experience these, call your doctor. Are women warned, like if you have heart palpitations or if you start to feel dizzy, call your doctor and talk about this bed rest?
No, I think that women are not given very much instruction at all on what the possible hazards could be, or as we just discussed, what the actual benefits might be. It's very vague, and part of that is because bed rest has this has the appearance of something normal, right? It's just an extension of what you usually do every night, something that requires no additional equipment, just the bed or couch that you have at home. But at the same time, there are drastic and really, really worrisome effects. Like, women who become pregnant already have a greater proliferation of clotting factors in their blood. And one of the risks of being on bed rest is blood clots, because you have pressure on your veins in places you didn't. You have a narrowing of the blood vessels, and combine that with the clotting factors, and you have this situation where a woman could be likely to get a blood clot or suffer a stroke in one of those ways. So, like, I think that, you know, we at least need some standardization in the kind of information that is given to women who are prescribed this, and they should be able to know exactly what they're getting into in terms of the adverse effects, and they should know also that if they do want to undergo it, there's no evidence that it helps.
What about the argument that bed rest might give a pregnant woman like a pass not to put everybody else's needs before their own? Is that a reason to consider it a viable alternative? You know, lots of people who are experiencing difficult pregnancies in the modern world might also be expected to continue holding down a full-time job and caring for other children and cooking dinner, that sort of thing.
I'm sorry, could you say that one more time?
Well, in the modern world, a woman who has a difficult pregnancy may or may not be helped by bed rest, but bed rest sort of gives her a pass to maybe not fulfill all the other responsibilities that she ordinarily would have in her life.
Yes, yeah. And I did speak to a doctor who said occasionally a woman will request bed rest because they cannot get time off of work in any other way. Hmm. So that seems to me like it points to another problem in our society, right? Lack of maternal leave or paternal leave support for the mother in situations where she's not under direct medical threat. The most important thing to me, I think, is that you know, rest is not an evil. I think pregnant women do need to rest more than women who are not pregnant. You're going through a lot. But the question is, if you feel like resting, are you able to rest? If you feel like moving, if you feel like doing something that you normally do in your life, are you allowed to? And I think that women should pay attention to their bodies and pay attention to how they're feeling, but that the order to stay still, stay lying down, stay in bed, rearrange your life around that principle can be really harmful.
What is the effect on employment? I would imagine there are a lot of jobs that can't or won't allow a woman to be gone for weeks before she leaves for maternity leave.
Yes, and I've never been pregnant, so I've never personally experienced this, but the message boards are full of stories from people saying that they lost their job because they were not allowed to go on leave for more than 2 weeks, and here they are, they have to be on bed rest for 2 months. So a lot of women are under intense stress because they've lost one income at this exact point when they're going to need a steady flow of income to take care of their growing family. I think that that's very common, and that's also something I'd like to see change.
Yeah. All right. We're speaking this hour with writer Alexandra Kleeman. She wrote the cover story for the December issue of Harper's Magazine. It's called The Bed Rest Hoax, and it's about the fact that bed rest is still prescribed to pregnant women with difficult pregnancies, but not prescribed for almost any other health condition anymore. We'll talk more in just a few minutes. The telephone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or send me a tweet. I'm at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, with test preparation courses for graduate school admission, including the GRE, GMAT, and LSAT. smu.edu/test prep.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with the author of the Harper's Magazine cover story for December. It's called The Bed Rest Hoax, and my guest is Alexandra Kleeman. If you would like to join the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Alexandra, lots of women believe that bed rest saved their pregnancies and allowed them to have healthy deliveries. And I think, you know, you acknowledge in the piece, many women who go on to deliver healthy babies are convinced that the sacrifice was worth it. And I think if I had been prescribed bed rest and then had a healthy baby, I would believe that the bed rest had something to do with it.
Definitely. I feel like, you know, in the stories I read, you're so happy, you're so overjoyed to have this new addition to your life. You feel grateful for everything that got you there. You know, I wouldn't want to put down in any way that feeling, but it seems to me like an especially big problem when women are feeling like they're not doing the right thing, when they have trouble adhering to strict bed rest, when they're worrying that they're not doing enough because as much as they've tried, their contractions are still coming or their baby is still sort of endangered. And there's a causal link there that I just don't think is based on concrete fact.
Well, let's go to the phones now. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We have Sonali on the line in Dallas. Hi, Sonali.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
Well, no, I just wanted to kind of offer my experience. I had two children under the age of 35. Well, I mean, while under the age of 35, had very healthy pregnancies throughout. In both instances, I was put on bed rest for the final month of pregnancy. And in both instances, I delivered early. The first time, I went into kind of preterm labor, and they put me on bed rest for an entire month, and then eventually, you know, kind of allowed me to have the baby at 34 weeks. And the second time, it was due to low amniotic fluid. And, you know, both times I fought it very hard. I run a law practice. I had another kid, you know, with the second instance. And it was really, really kind of, you know, a difficult situation for my family to cope with. And I fought it very hard, and in both instances, the doctor and, you know, my husband and family, everyone said, you don't have a choice, you're not the patient, the baby's the patient, you know, just, like, shut up and lay down, basically, which is, you know, what happened both times. But I found myself, while in the hospital, really kind of feeling, you know, that it wasn't necessary, wondering if I was just there because, you know, kind of for financial reasons, in the sense that, you know, our insurance is going to cover it and it'll be a nice little windfall for my OB-GYN. At the same time, I'm super grateful to her because both pregnancies turned out okay and they were early deliveries, so maybe she was right all along. I kind of wanted to know if you'd, you know, in your research encountered stories like that or, you know, just to offer that perspective to this discussion.
Thanks for your call.
That's great. Thank you. Yeah, definitely I have encountered stories like that where women didn't want to be on bed rest. They fought it. They went on bed rest, and it all turned out okay in the end, right? And again, the feelings of gratefulness for every process that was somehow involved in that, which all led to a happy outcome, is all there. I think it would be great, though, if the sort of forums and information sources that women turn to for support when they're prescribed bed rest offered some of this information, which is available, like, in select medical journals, and not all that digestible, not all that easy to stumble upon form. But we need to start a conversation in a broader cultural context about this, just so that people know that a doctor prescribing bed rest to you, you know, it may have to do with their own personal habits as a doctor. It may have to do with what their hospital does or what they were taught or maybe not taught in their particular medical school. So give women who don't necessarily want to be on bed rest some authority from which to speak, because I think too often if a woman doesn't want to go on bed rest, it can be seen as selfish, right? Like, oh, you don't want to stop living your life, you don't want to stop doing what you want to do, you don't want to stop walking around and exercising, things that you're used to. So,
what's interesting, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but, you know, what Sonali described was, it didn't sound selfish to me. She's like, I had a job, I had another child to care for. These are, you know, very few women who have to be away from their work and their families stop worrying about their work and their families.
No, and I think that, you know, women want to take care of the children they already have, too, and it's distressing to be separated from them, for the children, for the family, and for the mother herself.
So is anyone doing comprehensive research on this question today?
To me, see, I don't come at it as a doctor, but I come at it as a journalist, researcher. And the story of my research was difficult because the studies were a little bit scattershot. There just isn't as much research as you'd like, and when you see gaps, like gaps of years between one study and another, you worry that you're missing something. But as hard as I looked, and we had a whole Harper's fact-checking team looking for more support for either position, and there just wasn't that much. There are 5 or 6 Cochrane studies that study the effect of bed rest on different ailments that it's prescribed for. And these round up all the studies that they can find that are controlled, clinical, well-supported studies, and they synthesize them. They do their own statistical analyses and try to figure out whether we can draw a conclusion from all of the strong, stable evidence that we have. And none of them have shown a benefit for bed rest.
What did you learn about how long it takes to regain a sort of baseline level of fitness after you yourself rested for 5 days?
Mm. Yes. Well, I'm a writer, so my life tends to be sort of sedentary, and that's actually made it pretty difficult to get back to what I consider my baseline. The longer you're on bed rest, the more time it takes to recuperate. And in the NASA studies, they will have a subject in bed for 3 months and then going through rehabilitation for a month, maybe. So it takes a lot of time to work back up to full strength, and it takes actual effort, whereas to maintain, you know, the right amount of musculature and things for what you normally do in a day, you can sometimes do sort of automatically or with light exercise. I actually felt the thing that bothered me the most after going on bed rest was leg tenderness, which isn't a problem that I had ever even known about, but it's strange. Lying on your side normally with shifting around and with getting up, you never really notice it, but if your legs are sort of together, positioned one on top of one another for too long, you feel the little swell of your knee digging into your other leg. And so I had leg tenderness up until maybe a month ago.
Wow. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 1-800-933-5372. You can also email think@kera.org. I should say there's been a response, and you may have seen this on the internet, from people who are disappointed with the piece, who feel like you are sort of painting all pregnancies with the same brush. Were you anticipating that criticism from people who feel like bed rest was prescribed by their doctors, they trust their doctors, and feel as if bed rest made a difference in their pregnancy?
Yeah, I definitely anticipated some of that, and I wanted to be very careful about how I phrased my my argument. I think that mothers are heroes, right? They work so hard for their unborn baby. They change their lives. They'll do anything they can to protect their baby. And I don't want to invalidate those efforts at all. At the same time, I think that the loyalty that some women feel towards bed rest, because it was involved in the process of having their wonderful child, the loyalty can make them sort of react to criticism of the treatment in a way that, you know, may not help a woman who is on bed rest and really unhappy with it and feeling bad about herself because she's not able to do it happily and with, like, her whole heart in it. I definitely have encountered some pushback even from family members of mine who were on bed rest themselves. And I feel that I don't want to criticize any choices that someone's made, but I want the dialogue about, you know, antenatal care to include this information about bed rest.
All right, let's go back to the phones. This time we have John on the line in Dallas. Hi, John.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have a real quick comment about the blood clots in the legs, DVTs, that I think the guest maybe misspoke about it leading to stroke as opposed to a pulmonary embolism. Without a right-to-left shunt in the circulation, you wouldn't get a stroke from that, just for clarification. The other thing I'm a little bit concerned about is the narrative about the patient that was the doctor was concerned would miscarry and wanted the patient to stay in the hospital and then therefore got ethics and the legal side involved sort of paints the picture that the doctor was just trying to protect himself and not concerned about the patient's safety. The event, I guess, sounds like a miscarriage happened 3 days later, which could have happened at home and could have been very dangerous for the mother. And I don't think that aspect of the thought process was included there. And so I'm not sure that was quite fair reflection of the physician.
Well, thanks for your call, John. Do you want to respond to that, Alexandra?
Yeah, and I'm sorry if I painted the physician's intentions in a limited light. Like, I'm certain that though there could have been a liability issue at play, there's also a desire to protect the patient that is definitely there. And, I don't think that we can tell from the facts as they're laid out whether she would have had a miscarriage if she had been at home. You know, I think that stress is a factor in that. But it's definitely an unknown. And I think the question for me is just, when we're dealing with an unknown, how are we going to use this therapy, which does not have much evidence to back it up, but which has some known negative side effects?
So at this point, having done all this research, Alexandra, if you had a friend or a sister, or if you yourself had an experience where a doctor said you need to rest for a significant portion of your pregnancy, what questions would you recommend people ask about this recommendation?
Well, apropos of one of the earlier callers, I want to say ask the doctor how this treatment might affect someone with your unique slate of medical conditions. Ask them what exactly they think the benefits will be. Ask specifics about what they want from you. Are you resting more each day, or are you supposed to be resting the entirety of the day? Are you allowed to sit up? Are you allowed to go to the kitchen? These are things that it seems from my research that doctors don't naturally always supply their patients with. So get the specifics you need. And I think that women shouldn't be afraid to articulate why they do not want to go on bed rest, and also mobilize some of this information. The National Society of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, I think, they do not recommend bed rest. And if a woman looks on the internet, does a Google search, and finds that, I think they should feel comfortable bringing it to their physician because there's dissent within the medical community.
Alexandra Kleeman's article, The Bed Rest Hoax, is the cover story of the December issue of Harper's Magazine. Alexandra, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is associate producer with help on the phones today from Braylon Becton. Our executive producer is Jeff Whittington. You can contact the show via email at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.